Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. We begin the show with a special shout-out to a listener named Dora Togia, our 9,000th Facebook fan. Thanks to all of you who like the show, and the race to 10,000 is on at facebook.com/BrianLehrerWNYC. Dora, welcome. A lot of fun stuff to do on our Facebook page. And we really begin today with three interesting stories involving both the city and the state of New York. One, Governor Cuomo is getting involved in the city's stop-and-frisk controversy. He wants to change state law so fewer of those stopped can get arrested for marijuana possession. Two, Cuomo's plan for a giant convention center and casino at Aqueduct Racetrack is dead for now, with the lead developer pulling out. But a New York Times report says that company gave Cuomo and his allies political donations worth $2 million. And three, a state judge cast doubt on the plan for livery cab street hails in the outer boroughs because Mayor Bloomberg never got city council's approval before taking it to Albany. So let's talk about all three, and maybe we'll even get in a word on the latest on the mayor's supersized sugary drinks ban with WNYC's Elsa Chang, who broke the story that the police were making people empty their pockets, then arresting them for displaying marijuana, and Ozzie Pabura, political reporter for Capital New York. Hi, Elsa. Hi, Ozzie.
Hi there.
Hello.
Elsa, your discovery about the way police force marijuana interview, then arrest people for showing it, is still causing policy changes. First, Commissioner Kelly told cops to stop doing that. Now the governor is getting involved. What exactly is he proposing?
Well, he's basically saying he wants to, quote-unquote, clean up the law. So just to reiterate for everybody, in New York State, it's only a crime if you're possessing a small amount of marijuana if it's in public view. If it's not in public view, say it's in your pocket, it's called a violation. You're only supposed to get a ticket and pay a fine. So what Governor Cuomo wants to do is make every possession of a small amount of marijuana, that is 25 grams or less, either if it's in public or in private view, be non-criminal. That is, you can only be charged with a violation, you can only be ticketed, and all you have to do is pay a fine. You can never be arrested for the misdemeanor of possessing marijuana.
So here is the governor on this.
There's a blatant inconsistency. If you possess marijuana privately, it's a violation. If you show it in public, it's a crime.
So, Elsa, does that clip mean he would allow public display of pot, not public smoking of pot?
That's correct. If it's 25 grams or less, you can hold it in a Ziploc bag with your palm open to the sky and walk down the street right in front of all the police officers, and they cannot arrest you for the misdemeanor of possessing marijuana, but they can certainly ticket you for having marijuana in your possession, and you would have to pay a $100 fine.
So, Ozzie, weakening drug laws is often a politically risky proposition, especially in some places. What does the governor think he gets or risks from this politically?
Well, what he gets out of this is being able to say something to Black and Latino legislators and lawmakers who have been decrying the number of stop and frisks that have been happening. There's actually a very large protest that's coming up on Father's Day, and there's even LGBT groups are actually organizing and joining forces with this effort. And this,
so is the UFT, I understand.
Right. The UFT, NAACP, you're going to have Christine Quinn there, who's not known to attend events where the mayor is disparaged in any kind of way. So this thing is moving beyond a small segment of the population that is targeted for police action. And there is really a very public conversation about police policies. And what Cuomo is doing is saying, I'm addressing this issue. He's trying to get out ahead of this event. But he's also telling people that there's a smarter way to deal with this issue, and that he didn't quite use the words that Hakeem Jeffries had used, but Hakeem Jeffries, who's an assemblyman who's running for Congress in Brooklyn, had said the police were using entrapment. That is, people were getting arrested for following exactly what the police were telling them to do. And that's a classic case of something that should be corrected.
And Ray Kelly had already stopped or told them to stop doing it.
Right. I just want to chime in a little bit of how Cuomo rolled out this legislative proposal yesterday. He was very careful about not criticizing the Bloomberg administration's stop and frisk policy. In fact, he was directly questioned, do you think stop and frisks are excessive in this Bloomberg administration? And he sidestepped that question. He says, as to the excessiveness question, I'm going to leave that up to the commissioner and the mayor to figure out. It's a balance between relations with communities and public safety, and they're clearly dealing with that problem. So he wouldn't go so far as to say that he was against the level of stop and frisk happening in the city, but marijuana arrests are inextricably tied to stop and frisk in the city. If you look at the precincts with the highest rates of marijuana arrests, they are almost exactly the same precincts with the highest rates of stop and frisk, and they are almost all precincts that are heavily Black and Latino.
And Ozzie, the latest development is that the mayor is supporting this bill, which is designed to change his policy that he has previously stuck by.
Right. So the mayor has vociferously defended everything that Ray Kelly has done. And what he gets to now say is he's siding with Cuomo and he's getting rid of what, in essence, Ray Kelly has been asking for this kind of policy, although, as Elsa has shown, it has not been effective whatsoever. So Cuomo comes in, proposes a law change. Bloomberg gets to say, well, that's what we were calling for, too. So everyone gets to look like they're all on the same page. But somehow, in between Ray Kelly saying to do this, Mike Bloomberg saying to do it, police on the streets have clearly not been doing it. And Cuomo gets to step in and say, I get to solve a problem that's clear and evident, but I don't go as far as to say legalize it and smoke it if you got it.
Mm-hmm. But when you say a policy that clearly has not been effective, doesn't the city argue that busting people for small things like turnstile jumping and a little bit of weed prevents more serious crimes because it creates lawful rather than lawless environments on the streets?
Right.
They say it's you know, key to the historic violent crime reduction that the city has seen in the last 20 years.
The broken windows theory. Right. Now, what Ray Kelly has articulated in a number of different venues, and State Senator Eric Adams has spoken about this, which is that Ray Kelly has sort of used the police force to make a certain segment of the population feel like at any moment they can be stopped and frisked, and that will deter them, which is not exactly the same thing as the broken windows theory, which was if you let lawless behavior become apparent, other people will take clues from that and that they believe there's a bigger issue and you can actually get away with even more than what you're seeing. So what the stop and frisk policy was doing was enacting some part – it was mirroring – the broken windows theory without actually being rooted in as much basis, and has actually kicked up a lot of resentment.
And Elsa, this has had a lot of impact on the lives of people who've been stopped and frisked and told by police officers to empty their pockets and then displayed marijuana and maybe been arrested. The racial disparity is clear because, you know, the rates show that at least as many white people smoke marijuana as Black people per capita.
That's right. But
they're not in these positions to get stopped and frisked and busted.
Right. 87% of the people arrested for marijuana in the city are Black and Latino. Interestingly enough, about 85% to 87% of the people stopped and frisked in the city are Black and Latino. So the numbers really measure up. It's very interesting what Cuomo was saying. He did bring up that scenario about officers during a stop and frisk asking somebody to empty their pockets. And yesterday, he treated that as a scenario that was always permissible. Now, I can introduce you to a ton of defense lawyers, law professors, and civil rights advocates who could tell you there are a lot of cases in which an officer ordering a person to empty his or her pockets is actually an illegal search, because a person during a stop and frisk is in a custodial situation. He may not feel free to leave when an officer commands him to empty his pockets. That's an order, so he merely complies. It doesn't amount to a consent to a search. So it really amounts to an illegal search if the officer does not have probable cause in such situations to have effectuated that search.
Elsa Chang, WNYC criminal justice reporter and recovering lawyer, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
We'll continue to see what your reporting has wrought. Ozzie Paber, a political reporter from Capitol, New York, still with us. And let's go on to the Aqueduct Convention Center and Casino, dead at least for now. The governor made this project such a centerpiece of his forward-looking State of the State address. Now talks have broken down with a Malaysian developer who got the no big contract, a casino company called, okay, tell me, is it Genting or Genting?
Genting.
What happened?
What happens is they wanted a guarantee that if they were going to build a convention center and a casino, that one would not open up next door. They wanted exclusivity. And Cuomo said, I cannot guarantee that because there's not a guarantee that the state constitution will be changed that will permit casino that will legalize casino gambling in New York. So he couldn't take that extra step and guarantee it. And what happened was, without that guarantee, Genting pulled back. And also, Cuomo has been clear in saying he doesn't want to get into the business of specifying where one will go and getting into the logistics of it just yet. He had said before, Manhattan, probably not a good idea. Aqueduct, that will work. But when you get further into the conversation about how far, where, and where not, that's where he starts saying, we need to slow down. And he also said, very interestingly, that the people who are operating racinos, which are casinos with an R that he's derided as a legal loophole that shouldn't even exist, that those people that are currently operating them do not have any kind of exclusivity or advanced preference for operating casinos.
Mm-hmm. So now some of this gets pretty down in the weeds. And I want to ask you about something that jumped out at me from Genting's statement on this. They said the constitutional amendment, which you referred to, competitive landscape, which you referred to, but also tax rate and infrastructure support made any decision difficult. So that sent my radar a-beaming and made me wonder, does that mostly mean they wanted more public spending and tax breaks than the governor was willing to give them?
Very, very possible. When Cuomo has spoken about this, he has said, who am I to second guess a private company, you know, the private sector that wants to donate all their money to this effort?
Invest.
Invest, not donate. That's the other story. But he said it's not his job to second guess a private company that is looking at their data and that's willing to put up their money at no risk to taxpayers. Well, as we've seen with stadium deals in New York City and throughout the country, governments and municipalities are asked to build the roadways and the infrastructure leading up to the front door, and you ask the host to sort of do everything from there forward.
Is there any detail on that, what they may have been asking for that the governor was balking on that helped lead to the negotiation breakdown?
Not yet.
Now, the New York Times reveals in its lead story today that Genting gave a political group allied with Cuomo some $2 million in political donations. Can you break that down for us?
Yes. So there is the New York Racing Association, which Genting and a few other companies are part of, gave donations not to Cuomo's political campaign, not to the nonprofit that Cuomo founded before he got into government, but into the Committee to Save New York, which is a very powerful organization that does not have to disclose its donors, which has been Albany's biggest spending lobbying organization that has promoted the governor's agenda. And
led by Wall Street banks and real estate developers.
Yes. Initially, to counterbalance the influence of
the unions,
public sector unions. Yes. So that group, which still exists, received money from this organization. Now, interestingly, the New York Times had three very good reporters working on this story, and it came out online. The Wall Street Journal had also a very good reporter who spoke to the head of the New York Racing Association, James Featherstone, who said explicitly he gave money to the Committee to Save New York because he thought they would be helpful to moving this part of the agenda forward. And he says, if I didn't think that, I would not have given them the money.
Is that an admission of a quid pro quo?
It's an admission of
an ask for a quid pro quo?
An ask for a quid pro quo. But the really interesting part, I think, is actually back in the Time story where they say, according to sources, the Cuomo administration deterred Genting and other companies from doing a public ad campaign. They said, don't spend your money there. Put your money into the Committee to Save New York. That right there, that direct link, is very important. The group does not coordinate with the governor. The governor is not supposed to know what exactly the group is doing. They're supposed to be independent.
They're supposed to be lobbying the governor.
Exactly. And by steering that money away from television ads and speaking directly to the public and steering it to this group, you see a portrait of a governor who is steering the events in Albany and controlling one of the largest lobbying groups in the Capitol.
This is one of those somewhat complicated campaign finance stories, it seems to me, where it's a little hard to tell who was wooing whom and who was indebted to whom.
They're all in bed together.
Right? So maybe it was that Genting wanted the governor's business. Your quote seemed to indicate that. Maybe after already getting the governor's business, they felt obligated or pressured to support him politically.
It's interesting. The Cuomo's people say he pushed for the legalization of casino gambling before the donations started coming in. Well, if you go back to the Times reporting, if the governor steered them away from doing a public ad campaign and into donating, you have to wonder which came first. Were there negotiations about doing this? Were there talks? It becomes a very messy situation. And for a governor who's portrayed himself as someone who is not partisan, as someone who is effective. Sheldon Silver refers to him as the most effective governor in the country, laying the groundwork for a 2016 campaign if should that ever happen. But the idea that he's getting drawn into a question about influencing his agenda based on donations, that is an incredibly messy, complicated situation. And that's the kind of thing where even if you come up with the right answer, the fact that you had to spend time discussing it, it makes you look less like the governor that Cuomo wanted to be.
All right. We've gotten through two of these three stories. We're going to come back and finish up on the third intersection between city politics and state politics, and now the judicial sector, a court stepping in and blocking the livery cab outer borough hails program that Mayor Bloomberg wanted but Governor Cuomo brokered. Stay with us for that as we continue with Ozzie Pabra from Capitol New York. Brian Lehrer on WNYC with Ozzie Pabra, political reporter for Capitol New York. We'll finish up on our trio of stories of Bloomberg and Cuomo stepping all over each other and a judge stepping on both of them in the case of the Outer Borough Livery Cab Street Hail Plan. And after they introduced the light green design for the cars and everything, Ozzie, what went wrong?
Everything. It depends who you ask. Bill de Blasio, the public advocate, who's actually going to be appearing with Mayor Bloomberg a little bit later today, had said that the mayor needed to get approval from the city council, a home rule message. He needed to get city lawmakers to tell the state, we want to do this before actually doing it. You saw it with congestion pricing. And the mayor skipped that part of the process, and he went straight to state lawmakers, thinking they would be more susceptible to his influence rather than the taxi lobby. And with some help from the governor, belatedly, they all agreed to make this change. And now de Blasio filed an amicus brief, and he said, look, you needed to get that home rule message. A lawyer that was working on the case, Richard Emery, who some of your listeners may recall, was a person who brought a lawsuit that helped change the Board of Estimates to the current 51-member city council.
This goes way back to the 1980s. The whole New York City old form of governance thrown out as unconstitutional.
Yes.
Because the borough presidents of all people had too much power and creating a real legislature, a city council, at Richard Emery's hand.
Right.
So what's his role in this?
He was a lawyer working on this latest lawsuit. And I spoke to him earlier, and he said what Bloomberg was in essence doing by arguing against the need for this home rule message, he was saying that the state can change what the city council and what city lawmakers had traditionally been in charge of. And what Richard Emery was telling me was that the mayor was arguing to weaken the power of city lawmakers. He was saying, I'm the mayor, but actually it's state lawmakers that really have the power to do this, so we should not stop them from doing it. And Emery was very colorful, as lawyers can be, in explaining this. He told me that the mayor was slitting the city's throat for the sake of his legacy. And what he was trying to say was the mayor was arguing to weaken the power of the office he's currently in for the sake of getting this agenda through.
So does city council now have to take up delivery cab, outer borough, light green taxi, street house?
It looks like that might be the only way that this thing gets through.
And they don't support it, right?
Some of them do. And I think the fear is that the taxi lobby, the people that represent
the yellow cab lobby,
the yellow cab lobby will say, we had exclusive rights for street hails. And if you expand that, you have just lowered the value of our medallions that we just paid for. And no one is going to argue that people in outer boroughs shouldn't be able to hail cabs a little bit easier. The council members in the outer boroughs are going to support this. The people that are going to be the trouble, that are going to be hard to come by, are the ones who say, yellow cab medallions invested a lot of money in this. What happens to them?
So we've been through marijuana busts being stopped and frisked by the governor.
Right.
Livery cab street hails stalled by a judge. The Aqueduct Casino plan coming up snake eyes at the intersection of business and politics. But we're not done yet. For dessert, a nice big sugary drink before the mayor bans them in most eateries. Even Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert can't agree on this one.
No more giant sodas. Come on. This is America, the land of plenty. We haven't even achieved type 3 diabetes yet.
Wow, Mayor Bloomberg. Wow. I love this idea. It combines the draconian government overreach people love with the probable lack of results they expect. What are you doing?
Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert.
They're pretty good.
Credit to ABC This Week, which put that little montage together and we borrowed it from them. So the public reaction, I think, is more Stewart than Colbert so far, according to the polls. What are you doing?
Exactly. A reader sent me a text that I think sort of encapsulates this whole thing. This guy said, so you're telling me I can carry around less than 25 grams of pot and not get arrested, but I'm not allowed to carry a 32-ounce drink. Is that what's happening in New York City? And basically,
which one is really more dangerous to your health? I don't expect you to answer that question.
I'm too busy drinking my very large coffee right here.
I see. But it's not over 16 ounces. It doesn't look so. All right. We will leave it there. Is the mayor behind his own pet obsession here, or is he ahead of the curve? I guess time will tell on that one, too. Ozzie Paber, a political reporter for Capital New York. Great job. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.